All right, good afternoon, everybody. It is Thursday afternoon, April 29th, Chem12BL, and we are doing a electrophilic aromatic substitution study session or problem-solving session. That's what we're doing. So the other thing that we need is we need to do a screen share. Okay, so I think that's all in place, all up and running. Let's do this. Electrophilic aromatic substitution problem session. We'll see what questions come up as we go through this. Let's do this first one with BR2. And FE, we can use BR3. Use ferric bromide.
Hi, Connor. I am doing all right. I'm just in a chemistry lecture right now.
Sterling, oh. Your mic.
I was gonna.
I'm tutoring and I'm also doing this at the same time.
That's funny. All right. Why can't I find? There it is, chat. All right, who's got an idea what happens here? First thing we need to decide is this group, whether this group is an electron donating group or an electron withdrawing group.
Withdrawing.
Yes. Okay, so once we've decided that it's an electron withdrawing group, then the second decision, so that was number one. Second decision is it an ortho para director or is it meta director?
Jason, could we just go through the mechanism and then kind of see what's favored?
We could. So we could always decide it by mechanism once we... once we know that it's electron withdrawing group and what it is that we want to do.
Because so, we place the radical on the carbon attached to the carbonyl.
Well, no radicals with these. So these don't have radicals in that way. What these are doing is we're taking the group here, the bromine is bonded to the metal. So we can even put that out discreetly, is that's bonded to the iron. That's putting a strong partial positive. This is reaching out, it's grabbing that, making a bond with it. In so doing, there are three possible locations where that bond can occur. That bond can occur in this position, giving me a positive charge that resides there. We could, there's not quite enough room there. We could have that reach out and grab that bromide such that the bromide position is in that location. Or there's one more option. Where it could grab that bromide in the para position. And I think I'll put the positive charge on that side so that we have ortho, meta, and para. So those are our three possibilities. Now, out of those three possibilities, the next step is that the proton gets pulled and we create the fully aromatic system again. And so the next step is in that mechanism is some base pulls the proton, electrons flow in, and then each one of these will create a product, and the ratios of those products will depend upon the stability of the intermediate and on Hammond postulate and how that relates to the stability of the transition state that allowed for its formation. So what we need to do is we need to be able to assess the stability of each one of these cations. And that means that we need to look at the resonance contributors from each one. Now that's a lot of work. So not that we shouldn't do it, but part of going through and understanding the list in terms of being electron donating or electron withdrawing group allows us to be able to do this a little bit more efficiently. We should still be able to do this skill set because we're going to need this skill set when we come up to things that we don't understand how to do, things that have multiple substituents. We're going to need to fall back on this skill set and drawing out these resonance contributors in order to identify which species is the most stable. Okay, so there's the first one. That's our ortho. This is going to be our meta. We'll start there. And then one more for meta. So that's our meta. And then finally, we need to do para. And it does just take patience and attention to detail to make sure that you draw them all out correctly. And as always, what I say is simply draw them out and then go back and assess them. Don't try to assess them while you're drawing them. There's too many complications, too many places to make errors if you're assessing or trying to assess while drawing. Just concentrate on one skill at a time. And then go back and look at them and figure out what's different between each one. Now, what I would highlight is that I would highlight the electron withdrawing group. because that's the group that we're concerned about and how it affects the positive charge. And then I would also go and I would highlight the location of that positive charge. And what we can see is that there's two structures where the positive charge falls directly below the electron withdrawing group. So those structures are here. Let's see if I can do it. That's this structure and this structure. These structures are poor resonance contributors because they place the electron withdrawing group directly in conflict with the positive charge. And so what that does is it makes these guys here, ortho and para, higher energy. And the meta then becomes the lowest energy, the best option. Now that lowest energy for that structure brings down the energy for the transition state by Hammond postulate, making a lower E sub A. And when you have a lower E sub A, you have a faster reaction. So that becomes your major product. So now we can come back up to here and we can say, ah, this one here. Where we have the meta, that is going to be my major product. And so what's important to realize in going through all this is that, yes, we want to be able to do this work, but it's a ton of work to do for each problem. So you need a faster way to sort of visualize these in order to be able to do some of these problems a little bit faster. So one of the things that we come up with is looking at a model that when we have an electron donating group, that electron donating groups will target these three positions for substitution. These three positions, we say that electron donating groups are ortho para directors. And the reason that they're ortho para directors is because they place the positive charges at the three alternate positions that are not being substituted. And that brings in line your electron donating group with your partial positive charge, which allows for the extra stabilization. And what we say is that when that electron donating group is, when the electron donating group is smaller than a methyl group, or equivalent to a methyl group, then the ortho position is major. And that if that electron donating group is greater than, larger than a methyl group, I wouldn't say equal to, I would say larger than a methyl group, then the substituent goes into the para position as being the major dominant species. All right, and there's one more sort of like little thing here, which is that if the electron donating group is less than or equal to methyl, and one ortho blocked, taken up by another group, para becomes major. We'll look at that a little bit later. I don't think I want to necessarily dive into that detail right now, but that's one aspect of the statistical nature that there are two ortho positions. And if one ortho position is blocked, you cut the ortho product essentially in half. And the ortho product was only major by 60% to begin with. And so if you cut one down, the other one goes to 30%, para is still at 40%, para becomes the predominant species. And we'll see that later as we draw it out. The other thing is that when you have an electron withdrawing group, that electron withdrawing groups target these two positions for substitution. And that's because they put the partial positives at the other three. That takes your electron withdrawing group and it keeps it separated, alternated from the existing partial positives that would result in the intermediate. And so what we find here is that electron withdrawing groups are metadirectors. And I don't need to worry about size per se, because there are only the two metapositions and size is not a factor here. So at this point, sterics are not a factor.
So Jason, I get what you did with the top one where you place the partial positive follows the electron donating group, right? Mm-hmm. So that's where you would have your antibonding orbitals, but do you alternate just to spread them out? Is like
no. When you look at the resonance contributors. So oh, when I have an electron withdrawing group here, and I substitute in this position, then my positive charge goes and starts off one position from where I substituted, and then it skips over the hinge pin position, and then it skips over the hinge pin position again. And so if I think about this as my substitution point, then the positive charge alternates every other carbon. And that's what I'm trying to get at here, is that if I substitute here, my positive goes here, here, and here. If I substitute here, my positive goes here, here, and here. And if I substitute here, positive goes here, here, and here. It's the aggregation of all of the substitution positions and their possible resonance contributors.
Thank you.
Yeah. And same thing for the electron withdrawing group. I'm doing essentially the same thing. All right. And when there's a competition, and we have a competition between either electron withdrawing groups or electron donating groups, when there is a competition, between groups, I would say two or more substituents, the stronger donating group directs. And so basically what we're saying there is that meta is only a product when it is the least bad of the possible substitution positions. And so meta substitution is never stabilized. It's never that you have electron donating that is stabilizing a meta substitution position. It's just the least bad out of the possible opportunities. So when I look here, you know, if I look at ortho, bad interaction. If I have para, bad interaction. Meta doesn't give me any real bad interactions, but it doesn't give me any good positive interactions. So meta is the least awkward position to substitute when you have an electron withdrawing group. However, electron donating groups directly stabilize a partial positive and they give you good positive interactions. So the stronger the electron donating group, the stronger the stabilization of the intermediate. So what we say is that when there's a competition between two or more substituents, be them electron withdrawing or electron donating, no matter what, the stronger donating group directs. The group that is more capable of stabilizing the positive charge is the directing group. That's what we see in those cases. So that's what we look for. And along those lines, electronics first. This is more donating. And second, sterics. So after we decide on which group is more donating, then we look to see the size of the group. Is it a methyl or is it an ethyl or is it something else? And if it's larger than methyl, then it's going to push towards the para position. And if it's smaller than methyl, then we can sneak it in the ortho position. So we go electronics first, decide whether it's ortho para. Then we look at sterics second and decide where it goes based on sterics.
Is there a case though where sterics just make it like completely impossible?
No, it's never completely impossible. I mean, there are things, that's a good question. I mean, you can have situations where you have a tertiary butyl group and we can put a blocking group here. Sulfates are strong electron withdrawing groups. So this is an electron withdrawing group that we have here. And we have an electron donating group here. But we also have strong sterics. And so what predominates and what happens? Well, if we brominate this, what we find is that it will brominate in this position because the stronger donating group directs. And then in a nice little twist, this blocking group that we've used can be removed. There's a reaction whereby we can take and react this with H2SO4 sulfuric acid, and it can actually remove this group. So a tertiary butyl is just about the biggest group that we know of, and yet I can substitute next to it, even though the sterics are high, by using the electronics to push it into that position, because that's where it's going to be most stabilized by the electronics, is in the ortho position. And then I can remove this blocking group. And once I remove it, it looks like I've ortho substituted it. When in reality, what I did is I blocked para, which is where it would have gone, right? And so without that blocking group, what would have happened without that blocking group is this would have been the major product by far. Probably, this probably would have been greater than 90%. But I can make this in darn near 100%. Well, probably still 90 something percent. Let's call it like 94%. Because I'm gonna lose some that's gonna go into those metapositions. And this was simply based on sterics. But this one was achieved by electronics. So this is what I'm saying is when I say, look at electronics first, sterics second, electronics do play a very strong role in the stability. So even though this is massive sterics, the sterics are not enough to overwhelm the electronics of trying to put the positive charge below the sulfonate, where the sulfonate would pull from that positive charge. So the electronics in this reaction are far more important than the sterics in this reaction. I hope that kind of highlighted it. All right, let's take and do another reaction. Let's look at what happens. I wanted to start simply, and I think we have. I think I got into, with you guys, I got into sort of the meat of it a little earlier than I had anticipated within this section of problems that I've got, which is not a bad thing. It's just the differences between the groups. Okay, So this is a reaction, and I don't know that I showed you this one, but this is what's called an acid chloride. It's another way of getting to an acyl cation. Here, what happens is the aluminum trichloride, being a strong Lewis acid, does indeed steal the chloride away from this. It makes the Lewis acid base complex first, but thereafter, after binding to the chlorine, it rips the chlorine off. And so we get the minus charge, and you know, this is actually, let's not even do it with a minus. Let's just say that this bond here is sort of a dative bond. It's like, almost like a hydrogen bond in essence. And what happens is it becomes a full-fledged covalent bond when the chloride lets go of the other side, and we create the acyl cation, putting the positive charge in the wrong spot. And we create aluminum tetrachloride, which has the negative charge. And so this is very similar to using the anhydrides. The issue with anhydrides is you're limited in your ability to find symmetrical anhydrides. And so anhydrides can do the same as we can with an acid chloride. It's just that anhydrides generally are symmetrical because that's the easiest types of anhydrides to make. And they don't sell very many anhydrides with a lot of diverse R groups on them. However, an acid chloride can be made from any carboxylic acid, which allows me great diversity of R group that I can use here in this position. And so it's very common to see acid chlorides used for this job as opposed to anhydrides. But still, the question is, now that we understand kind of what's happening, the question is, well, where does the group go? And how do we decide where the group goes? We need to take a look at this group out here. And maybe what I'll do is I'll just use a highlighter color that says that's the group. Oh, yellow is so hard to see. Hey, that's the, yeah, did I freeze?
I think so.
I think you're right. Thank you. There's a tone to your question that lets me know immediately.
Yeah, I've mastered that. Thank you.
You've mastered that tone of, hey, something's wrong. I'm not seeing what I'm supposed to see. You're talking, but there's no images. There we go. Thank you. Okay, so I've highlighted the ethyl group, and we're trying to figure out now where this group is going to direct. Is this an electron donating group or is this an electron withdrawing group? So those are our questions. Electron donating group or electron withdrawing group. And we'll use the colors. So I'm going to continue to use, for electron withdrawing group, I'll use red. For an electron donating group, let's be consistent, and we'll use blue for an electron donating group. And so what is this group?
Donating.
It is. Alkyl groups are donating. Okay, so we've made the decision and we know what type of group it is. It's a donating group. And as an electron donating group, then, I need to decide, is it orthopara or meta director?
Orthopara.
Right. All electron donating groups are orthopara directors. All electron donating groups are orthopara directors. It is only the electron withdrawing groups which are meta. And so this is going to be an orthopara director. And then I need to decide on sterics. So this was my first question. My second question, which really one and two are tied together. I shouldn't have to ask one or two twice. But number three is sterics. Are we greater than methyl? Or are we less than methyl in terms of sterics?
We're greater than methyl, so para.
So para, exactly. That's the key there. Okay, so this is greater than methyl, and our decision then is made. And that should be the major species. Should be para. So yeah, there's a good sequence to follow through there, looking at the substituent, deciding whether it's an electron donating or withdrawing. If it's electron donating, that correlates to orthopara. If it's electron withdrawing correlates to meta. So I can cross off electron withdrawing, I can cross off meta. Then I just have to decide whether I'm larger than a methyl or smaller or equal to a methyl. And I think I have my equal then should go smaller or equal to methyl, because methyl, if it's methyl, then this is going to put us into the ortho positions. And if we're smaller, this is going to put us into the para positions. And so then I made that decision. Looking at the group there. All right, let's try a competition. Let's try this. I have a methyl and I have a nitro. And I want to do BR2 and FeBr3. So I want to brominate this. What do I need to decide? Where do I need to go?
So the nitro is an electron withdrawing.
It is indeed. And a methyl?
Donating.
Correct. Okay, so we've decided on our electron withdrawing and electron donating groups. And so now the stronger of the donating groups directs. And because the stronger of the donating groups direct, the para position is already taken. There are only the two ortho positions open and available. And so this will go into one of those two ortho positions. Let's see, does anything change if I change the position of the nitro? Keep everything else the same. Does anything change now? We still have the same groups. We have an electron donating group, and we have an electron withdrawing group. And so I'm still considering three positions, ortho, two that are ortho, excuse me, and one that is para. And the methyl group is the directing group. So what do I need to consider in this case?
Sterics.
Sterics would be the second factor to consider here. So as I start to consider sterics, I have to understand that that nitro group looks like this. And that it has free rotation about that sigma bond. So how does that compare to the sterics? Of say a methyl group. Is it larger than, smaller than? What do we think? It's quite a bit bigger.
Yeah. Would it just direct towards the one ortho?
Well, that's a good question, because now what we're seeing is this ortho position is probably out because of sterics of the two groups. And so we expect that sterics are going to prohibit that ortho position and knock that ortho position down. We also have some fairly good substantial sterics that are here. I think that this could be one where it could be argued, I'd really like to see the numbers on what this one is, but I would venture to say that we would put the bromine in this position, but it could be argued that we might get a fair amount of that too. I would guess that that one would be major.
I had a quick question about that.
Okay.
I wasn't thinking sterics so much as I was still, like I came to that same conclusion, but I was thinking about it in terms of electronics, because like putting it at that ortho position near the nitro group would not have as stable as the charge if you just put it next to the other ortho position.
Or okay, so that's a great, great question, which leads us into a different concept. If we take a look at the positive charge that gets created, when we substitute in the para position, and we look at the intermediate that gets created here. Now, I haven't drawn in any of the double bonds. I could put the positive charge in one of two places. I could put the positive charge either over here, assuming that my double bonds were here and here. But that is just a resonance contributor. By looking at the positive charge in that position and the positive charge as it would fall on the left-hand side. If I take a look at putting the bromide in the ortho position to the methyl, as I had originally suggested maybe being major, we could say that the positive charge falls here initially, and then we could draw the resonance associated with that. There we go. And then one more. And so what I hear you worrying about, or what I hear you basing your decision on, is the location of that positive as it develops and that initially, if the bromine adds to this carbon over here, that initially the positive charge develops either here or here away from the nitro group. Whereas if the bromine adds para, The positive charge develops either next to the nitro or to the left initially before it moves. Is that what I'm, am I interpreting your thoughts correctly?
I think so. However, I am like furiously scribbling. So I want to say yes.
I can draw resonance fast because I don't necessarily think about what it is that I'm drawing. I'm just drawing resonance. And so I have one skill set going at a time, whereas you guys are trying to listen to me and trying to draw and trying to think. And so you've got like three things going on where I've got only two. I'm just trying to talk and draw. And most of the time I'm on autopilot when I'm drawing. So I apologize. What I think I'm hearing you say is that when we focus on the addition as being this point of addition, that the positive charge develops here or here, and that that places the positive charge in close proximity to the nitro, problematic. When the bromide substitutes it in this position, the positive charge develops initially either here or here, farther away from the nitro, being beneficial.
Yes, I think that is what I meant.
Okay. I like the way that you're thinking, but I want to change that a little bit. The problem with that is that these do not individually exist, and that no original carbocation exists that when you substitute by the bromide, when the bromide substitutes or adds to the ring, the positive charge simultaneously increases across all three positions. Just as resonance contributors don't actually exist, resonance is just a model theory that allows us to try to see where the positive charge can be distributed. And so no matter where the bromide tries to substitute, the positive charges all grow at equal rate and are spread across equally across the three positions simultaneously. So if we consider that, that they're spreading simultaneously, what we're seeing is that they are spreading all on the same carbons simultaneously. In other words, if I alter my drawings and I rearrange them, I think that what you can see in the rearrangement is that now all of a sudden, the positive are in the same location in every three resonance contributor. Meaning that these three resonance contributors are all equivalent and make no difference. And you wouldn't be able to decide upon where it added first because the resonance contributors are all telling you the same thing. And so what it really comes down to is sterics as opposed to electronics in this. That viewing electronics in that way could lead to making an error.
Okay, that makes sense. I think it's just like a challenging thing just because I feel like up till this section, we've used charged as kind of like a fixed localized tool, but that it's honestly not in reality. It's a lot more delocalized than I tend to think of it as.
Well, no, in actuality, you are correct. We have used charge in a more localized way throughout most of the semester. And only when we got to allylic carbocations or when we had to look at resonance and we were trying to decide the stability of one structure over another and we analyzed the resonance, did we look at delocalized, but not in this same sort of way. This is still a little bit different than what we have been doing. And so, yes, when you have resonance, charge is not fixed and charge is spread over the resonance contributors. It may be spread unequally, like some of these resonance contributors we could say are major and some of them we could say are minor. For instance, right here, these both have a very favorable interaction in these two. And both of these resonance contributors are major resonance contributors because we have the electron donating group directly above the positive charge in both cases, stabilizing it. And so here what we have is we have an electron donating group, which is helping to reduce down the size of the partial positive, and it's contributing to that partial positive. It's doing it in an induction way, but it's helping to stabilize the partial positive that
wait,
stop, go back, get out of there. What I was trying to do is put a positive charge next to my partial. In this case over here, this one is the minor resonance contributor, the most minor. Because what we have over here is we have the electron withdrawing group directly opposed to the partial positive, and that is sucking electron density out of it, trying to, and it's destabilizing it. And this one over here, this is just kind of neutral. It's not doing either. So if I were to rank these, this would be the number one, this would be the number two, and this would be the number three in sort of an all overall weighted average. And it may be something that this is 90% and this might be 9% and this might be 1%. And I'm placing percentages where I probably shouldn't, but it's a weighted average of these, so that when I go and I look at the substitution in the para position, well, I was gonna make the different partial positives different sizes, but I think I've done enough to give you that sort of feel of that. But the reality is that even though we're saying major and minor and sort of this neutral species, they all simultaneously exist. And maybe I should now that I'm considering that, maybe what I should say is that these guys all exist in a arc of positive with the nitro group here. And I'm getting a very small partial positive, a very large partial positive, and sort of a medium partial positive when I substitute in this position. And that is the nature of the molecule as a whole. And I need to sort of have that duality nature. I need to be able to analyze the resonance contributors, but I also need to be able to keep this in mind that they are not individualistic, that they are simply helping to give me this picture, and that this is part of the picture that I need to work from.
So those, the size of those partial positives, would that correspond to like the size of the antibonding orbitals?
It does.
That's okay.
It does. In essence, I mean, maybe this will help. And I hesitate to do this, but why not?
Just send it. You only live once.
Just do it. I'm looking to see if I still have this up. And I do. And I can go to the job manager, create a new job. I'm not going to do this at a very high level of theory, because this one is big and will take a while. But I think I can do it at a low enough level of theory to make sense out of it. For some reason, my quick keys on my keyboard are not working, which means I got to go the slow method to do this, which is painful. Okay, so I've done all of those things, and I need to then give I need to give this a double bond, and a positive charge. So I need to tell it that this carbon is positive. And I also need to tell it that this nitrogen is positive. Nope, cancel. Maybe I don't. Maybe it knows that that's positive. Oh no, I see what it was doing. I didn't click off it to tell it. Okay, so now what I can do is I can clean this thing up. Rotate it around, see what it's looking like. It's kind of looking like what I want. I'll flip it this way. And then I'm going to take that forward to calculation and ask it to calculate in MOPAC the energy associated with this thing. And it has a charge of +1. I'm going to do AM. No, I'm not. I'm going to do PM3. And I'm going to ask it for a geometry optimization and leave it in the singlet. This will come back pretty quickly. And from this, what I can do is I can view the partial positives and negatives. And what you can see is that the nitro group, I'll put it in the right orientation. The nitro group, because of its electron withdrawing ability, does create a partial positive on this carbon because it's pulling so much electron density out of this one. But it's this one and this one and this one that, I take that back, it's this one and this one and this one. And that my major resonance contributor is where the largest partial positive is. Right? This is corresponding directly to where I drew the largest partial positive was directly below the methyl group. And then I drew the medium partial positive here, and I drew the smallest partial positive over here. And in fact, this one is so small in terms of the resonance contributor, it's such a poor contributor because the nitro group is sucking so much electron density out of it that the molecule needed to keep the partial negative of the carbon over here just to balance that partial positive coming from that nitrogen, or the full positive coming from that nitrogen. And so what we really see is that these two are really the big resonance contributors that are in this molecule when we look at its overall structure. Is that helping a little bit, or just validating a little bit what I've drawn in terms of trying to explain that it's not three resonance contributors, it's one overall molecule that bears partial positives in different sizes relative to where they can most be stabilized? I think that's what I'm trying to get at. And so I love, this is one of the things that I love about sort of being online, is that it affords me tools that sometimes I wouldn't have up all the time in the classroom. When I'm teaching in the classroom, I very rarely have the computer on and the projector on. And yet that just allowed me to highlight that the partial positive here below the methyl group is the largest. This one is the second largest. And this one, according to our model that we just calculated, would actually be partial minus still, because it can't support a partial positive there next to a fully positive nitrogen. And remember that that nitrogen is not just fully positive, it's sp2 hybridized, which makes it even more electron withdrawing. So so that's kind of a nice little model there. All right, let's see. Does this change if I move the nitro group? What would we predict? For this one. Nothing's changed. Well, something has changed. But go ahead. Somebody was going to say something.
Para.
What's that? Para? Yeah. I would expect this one to be para, to be the major, because now what we've done is we haven't really changed the electronics, but we have changed the sterics. And so what we find now is that this position has the least sterics. And so we would find some sterics here next to the methyl. And the other ortho position is taken up by the nitro, so it can't go there, which leaves only the ortho and the para position, and we would go to the para position. Now, why doesn't the methyl, we always said that One is a methyl substituent, that the methyl substituent should direct towards ortho because it's small. Let's look at that. Let's look at that for a second. Shoot. Here? Nope. Somewhere. I was looking at it this morning. That was yesterday's lecture. And I'm in lab. That's why I'm not finding what I want, which is, that's today's lecture. No, it's not. That's what I want. Sorry, take me just a second. I'll figure it out. Ah, that's what I want right there. This is an analysis that I did this morning. And so it got tagged into these notes. But I'll bring it into our lab notes now. And we'll walk through it. Okay. So in this analysis, what we looked at is having an R group and nitrating the ring. And the nitro group can go in the ortho position, the meta position, or the para position. And what we did is we changed the size of the R group. So here we changed the R from methyl to ethyl to isopropyl and to tertiary butyl. And we put these percentages on this for each one of these systems. And we said that it was directly related to the size of the group and that these groups had free rotation about their sigma bonds and constituted increasing amount of sterics in the ortho position. But what I didn't really make clear when I explained that on Tuesday was that when we look at the methyl group was 58.5% in the ortho position, which was greater than the 37.2% in the para position. But if you think about what's going on, there's only one para and there's two orthos. That means that this ortho on the right-hand side is substituted half the time, 29.35%, and the left-hand side, 29.35%. But you can't tell the difference between left and right, and so they combine to make 58.5. But what happens if you take one of those groups away? What happens if we put a blocking group? If you put a blocking group there and you take away the ortho position, now, is the other ortho still major when the group is as small as methyl? The only way to figure that out is that there are these remaining three positions. There is the remaining ortho, the remaining para, and there is the two remaining meta positions to my electron donating group. So in order to figure out what the new percentages are, I have to add the old percentages, 29.35 plus 4.4 plus 37.2. They add to 70.95. Then what I do is I take this number and divide it by 70.95 and multiply it by 100 to figure out what the new percentage is. And the new percentage is that ortho would be 41.4, meta would be 6.2, and para would be 52.4, 52.4 being more than 41.4. Para takes over as the major location. So if there's only one ortho available, regardless of how small the substituent is, the para position becomes the dominant position simply due to sterics. Did I make that clear enough? And I think just understanding that the math here is just adding up the total, figuring out what the total is, and then calculating out a new percentage from the total that's left over. And that's all I was definitely doing, or all I was trying to do. Okay, so what that means is that when I look at the nitro group blocking one of the ortho positions, and there's only one remaining ortho position, that this product is going to be the major product, not by a ton, but by enough that we would call it major. So this would be major by roughly 52.4% is what would be predicted. So we have to kind of keep that in mind. And that's a nice little problem to look at. All right, let's see. What if I want to, do this? HNO3, H2SO4. So this is a nitration, and I'm going to nitrate this ring system. Let's do it this way. We'll keep track of numbers. Positions 1, 2, 3, and 4. What do we need to consider?
Which is the strongest electron donating group?
Okay, which is the strongest electron donating group?
Tert-butyl.
Why?
Hyperconjugation. Maybe.
I like that, but it's not correct. In actuality, they are equally donating. That alkyl groups, as long as there are no strong electron withdrawing groups on them, are all pretty much equally donating. And the answer is what Sterling said, hyperconjugation. Because if you understand how hyperconjugation works by taking a look at a positive charge adjacent to an sp3 hybridized carbon. So here's our positive charge. And here's our sp3 hybridized carbon. Hyperconjugation says that the orbital that is this sigma bond is donating to this p empty orbital. And that the p empty orbital is empty in that I would draw yellow and green, and this one red and blue. And it would have sort of a small red lobe that would extend, that would be like right back there. And this would be the hyperconjugation model. So how does that hyperconjugation model change when I go to a larger R group? So if I go to a larger R group, I've still got the empty P orbital. And I still have these bonds here. This could be an R group, an R group, and an R group. And this is still a sigma bond. And my donation is still a sigma bond. And these R groups aren't helping me out any. Because just because they're bigger carbon groups doesn't mean that they can donate any more than a sigma bond can donate. And so all alkyl groups are sort of identical in their ability to donate. So that dispels another sort of myth that sometimes we think because it's a bigger R group, we think that it has more electron donating capacity, which that's not true. R groups all sort of are equal, unless there happens to be a strong electron withdrawing group on them that changes that. So what I like is sometimes when we get the chance to catch some of these slight misconceptions that we might have and just hone them down a little bit, which is good. Okay, so if we take and we say that they're both equally donating, then what's the only other thing to consider? Thanks, JC. I like it. That's awesome.
So next is induction.
The next is not quite induction. Because the induction was part of hyperconjugation, was sort of induction. That the induction and hyperconjugation kind of go hand in hand.
Sterics?
Sterics. There's only two answers in organic chemistry. It's either resonance or sterics. It's like you got a 50-50 shot on every answer here. Absolutely, sterics. That they're both going to direct in the ortho para, but the para positions for each are taken up, which means that we can consider 1, 2, 3, and 4 identical, except for the fact that we've got higher sterics on 3 and 4. So definitely the sterics around that tert-butyl group are going to be what are going to determine this. and push me more towards substituting ortho to the smaller methyl group. So this is good. I've picked good problems, I can tell, because I'm catching things. We're fixing things. All right, ready for the next one? Let's take and look at this guy versus chlorine. Oh, and I need to tell you what I'm reacting it with. Let's do acetic anhydride. And let's do ACl3, ammonium trichloride. Actually, I'm gonna give you a different one. Same group, I'm just giving you a different Lewis acid. Give you BCl3. Sometimes I just like to swap up my Lewis acids so that you can see a variety of Lewis acids and understand that Lewis acids are all sort of the same. Some of them are stronger, some of them are weaker. Sometimes we need a stronger one, sometimes we need a weaker one. But whenever you see a Lewis acid, you should be thinking, oh, that's just a Lewis acid. And I know that it's just going to fragment this into an acyl cation. And that's what I need to work from. Okay, so we need to decide then whether or not I have electron donating groups or electron withdrawing groups.
They both donating.
They are both donating. The chloride is slightly deactivating, but it sits on the donating group list. And the reason is because it's got lone pairs. And because of those lone pairs, it can actively donate to any existing carbocation that's below it. But if we look on the list, which one of these is stronger?
Probably the amine.
The amine is stronger. And that goes with the electronegativity that in terms of the amine has an electronegativity, which is 3.0. Well, actually, I was going to say that chlorine is less than 3.0, but I don't want to do electronegativity because that's going to womp that and mess that up. How do I know that that's the stronger donator? Well, because I can go back to lecture and I can go back to yesterday's lecture and back up here, I had a list. Nope, down here, I had a list all the way at the bottom of electron withdrawing groups and electron donating groups. Somehow I am not in the right place. Isn't that here?
So when they ask, how do you know what you know? I'm going to say, Jason gave me a list, and this is the only reason I didn't say why.
there it is. It's not actually just a list. That it is a list, but the list is based on rate. And so we could, it's not just a list of donating groups, but these are groups that that cause the reaction to run at faster rate. And so these are comparative rates. And while I don't have the numbers on the rates, I do have their ordered list in terms of rate. And what we find is that those groups that are amines with alkyl groups are faster rates than amines with hydrogens. Those are faster than oxygen. Those are faster than amides or esters connected through their heteroatoms. Those are faster than R groups. And these guys actually slow the reaction down a little, chlorines, bromines, and iodides, but they're orthoparadirectors because they are directly contributing electron density and they can resonance stabilize. So they're resonance stabilizers, even though they're inductively withdrawing and slow the reaction down. And so the amine is indeed the stronger donating group. So if that's the stronger donating group, then the way that I think about that when I do it is I highlight out my donating group and I think about being orthopara to that. Now the para position is taken up, so I can't contribute to the para position, which means that I can only go ortho to the amine. Technically an aniline derivative. But what that means is that I'm going to create this guy like that.
And that would be a configurational isomer, right?
Would be a what?
A configurational isomer.
Are you worried about rotating the aniline derivative and moving the methyl group to the other side?
Either or, yeah.
Yeah, you have free rotation about the sigma bond. In reality, what winds up happening is in solution, this is probably the major resonance contributor, It is the major configuration because the methyl group sterics are pointed away from the carbonyl here. And we can also get some intermolecular or intramolecular hydrogen bonding across the hydrogen and the oxygen, which tie that up in a pseudo sort of six-membered ring conformation as well. So that would help to lock that system up a little bit. But that's not contributing to the product ratio. All that is doing is that's just the configuration of the product once the product is made. It was all of the electronics that had to do with this being the major stabilizing group and pushing it towards the ortho positions, ortho to the major donating group. And the major donating group is the directing group. Okay. I'm tempted to ask a difficult question. Let's try it. Let's see how you guys do with this. Phenol, when reacted with one equivalent of bromine, and one equivalent of aluminum tribromide produces that guy. Phenol, when reacted with one equivalent of bromide, but three equivalents of aluminum tribromide gives this. I didn't give this to the morning group, but we never sort of got around to something like this. I just want to see what you guys do with it. Who's got an idea? I always feel like I ought to sit here and kind of go do 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 do, but that's just annoying, so I'll just wait. Work the problem backwards. Don't work it forwards. Work it backwards. Work it backwards from the curiosity. You know what I mean by that? When I say work it backwards from the curiosity, work it backwards from this product. This is the curious product. This is the one that we don't quite understand. What is it? What type of groups direct for the meta position?
Withdrawing groups.
Right. But this oxygen is clearly not a withdrawing group. But somewhere in this reaction, it must have become a withdrawing group. how could it have become a withdrawing group?
My guess is that when you up the equivalence of aluminum tribromide, what you do is you convert all of the equivalents of bromine into a really strong bromonium cation, and then that is fully solvated. So you end up with just a bunch of positive ions in solution, and then that partially...
Too complicated. Look for an easier solution.
Okay.
What is aluminum tribromide?
An acid.
What type of acid?
A Lewis one.
Okay. Are there any Lewis bases in this?
Bromide, or just the whole wouldn't it just deprotonate it or create like a complex with it?
Okay. Now we're getting someplace. What happens is the phenol is a Lewis base. And what winds up happening is the lone pairs on the phenol wind up being tugged on by the aluminum bromide.
That's what I said.
Not exactly. You didn't say that. You said that it created a lot of positive charge in solution through all these bromide ions, which is not exactly the same thing as the oxygen coordinating to the aluminum, creating an oxygen cation. I heard bromide cations, not oxygen cation. You may have been thinking that, but you got to choose your words carefully if that's what you were thinking. I'll give you that. All right, so what winds up happening here is all of a sudden, there's enough aluminum tribromide to coordinate to the oxygen in a strong Lewis acid base complex that converts the oxygen from an electron donating group to now a strong electron withdrawing group. And now that it's a strong electron withdrawing group, then it's going to predominantly direct into the meta position. And so you go from something here that was an electron donating group to, through a Lewis acid base complex, you go to a strong positive charge and a strong electron withdrawing group, which is a meta director. This actually happened in lab. We were doing a Friedel-Crafts reaction like this as one of the special projects, and they accidentally used too much of the Lewis acid, and we did get the meta substitute when we were trying to get the ortho. And in trying to backtrack and figure out what happened, we realized how much Lewis acid they had actually added and were able to figure out what the problem was, and that they had a phenol and they just overcompensated. So it's kind of interesting to think about that some of these strong electron donating groups, that if you use too much of the Lewis acid, these strong electron donating groups can be converted into an electron withdrawing group on accident just by playing with the ratios. Okay, next up. Let's take and do a synthesis problem. Okay, what do I need to do first, and what do I need to do second?
Add the isopropyl group.
Okay, let's figure out what happens. If we add the isopropyl first,
never mind, because then wouldn't it direct para?
Yes, it would. You caught it in time. And then we add the chlorine. The problem is that it's bigger than a methyl group. And because of the sterics, it's going to direct the chlorine to the para position, and we would get the para derivative. And so that's absolutely right. So if we change the order up and we add the chlorine first, we're still adding an ortho para director. It's just that that chlorine is smaller than a methyl, allowing then for when we add in the group here, that now the smaller group can direct to the ortho position and I can get the substitution pattern that we want. And so the order of addition becomes critical in these types of problems in trying to figure out which substituent you want to add first, second, and third if we're putting three different groups onto a molecule. Okay. Let's see. What if I want to do three substituents? Yeah. And actually, that's what I want to make. I was thinking on the fly as I was doing something else. Okay, so how do I do this?
Methyl first, or chlorine, and then the other one, and then isopropyl.
Okay, let's try it. Methyl first. Let's use CH3Cl, AlCl3. Put in chlorine second.
I take it back already.
As soon as I draw it out, you see it. I get to that point and you're like, your brain goes, dupe, nope. So yeah, the problem with that is that the chlorine winds up ortho to the smaller group. And so that's problematic. So we need another way.
I think you got to introduce an electron withdrawing group at some point.
Why?
Because you got to get something to direct meta.
Right. There's a group here that's meta. And everything, if you look at all three of these groups, all three of these groups are electron donating groups. And because they're all three electron donating groups, there's no way to get a substituent in the meta position when all three are electron donating groups. If we swap this up and I change one of these to an electron withdrawing group, the problem becomes easier. Let's just see this. We'll come back to this problem in a minute, but let me show you what's going on here. In fact, maybe what we'll do is we'll just highlight the fact that each one of these is an electron donating group, which is making it tough. Let's take and look at the problem from a different perspective. Maybe making one of the groups This is what I want to make. I apologize. And I want to start with benzene. Okay. So now what we've got is a situation where I've got two groups which are electron donating groups, and I've got one which is an electron withdrawing group. So now the electron withdrawing group can direct to the meta position, and then I can decide kind of how I want to deal with this. And maybe the easiest way, I think I see it. I'll let you guys tell me when you see it.
I'm like scared to answer now.
Don't be scared to answer. I mean, I have not done to you guys what I normally do to the class, which is oftentimes what I do is I bait the class to give me the wrong answer. And then as soon as the person gives me the wrong answer, I'm just like, absolutely not. That is just like the wrong thing. But I celebrate it because it means that you're paying attention. And I totally baited somebody to give me the wrong answer. And you gave me the answer that you should have given me all of the things, but it allows me to like make the example and then to show why that's not really true. And to do it, it gets everybody's attention and dive into the right thing. And so I don't, you know, a wrong answer is still a celebrated answer. It just means that we just haven't quite gotten there yet. And there's little parts that we need to look at. You're participating, and that is everything that I'm asking of you. So,
all right. I've heard public humiliation. like, in order to make the meta any kind, or like the electron withdrawing group any kind of reasonable director, wouldn't you have to add it first?
We could try that. Let's try and see what happens. So,
that's code for no.
It is code for no. It is, but let's try and see what happens. So if we put let's say we start with this, we know how to put this on. All right, let's put that on. Then we'll put on what we want to go in the meta position, which is the chlorine. So we'll put Cl2 and AlCl3, and the chlorine will absolutely go into the meta position, not a problem. We are 75% of the way there. The problem is here. When I take the CH3Cl and try to do this, where is it going to go? So the idea is that we would hope that we want it to go here. But the problem is that this is an ortho-para director. So we're directing here, here, and here. This guy here has strong sterics that are blocking both of these positions. And so the most available position is that position. And so out of this, what's going to happen, presumably, is that the methyl is going to end up there. And we're going to end up with that guy. So putting the meta director on for sometimes works if there's two substituents. But if you've got three, sometimes it doesn't work for you, doesn't pull for you. So try this. Tell me the answer to each one of these things. Put the methyl on first. Put the small group on first. After putting the small group on, go ahead then and put the acetyl group on, or the acete group, AlCl3. And where's that group going to go? Ortho or para? It's going to go ortho, right? Because the sterics are small, right? So because the sterics are small on the methyl, it's going to go ortho to the methyl. Okay, now what we do is we go and put the chlorine group on. And now I've got to consider my ortho-para director. And this is my ortho-para director, and so I'm directing, not there, those two positions. But remember what we said is that we said that when one of the ortho positions is blocked, para becomes the predominant species. Because even the small sterics of the methyl will push on what is trying to go para, ortho, and push it into the para position. And so there we fall and get what we're looking for. And it finally works out. Not an easy one to do, is it? Once you get three substituents, all of a sudden your brain can handle two just fine. Three just starts to like push the limits of the sequencing that needs to happen of each one of the steps. Okay, let's go back to this one though. How can I use what we just did to figure out how to do this one? So let me ask you another question. Can you take that molecule and turn it into that for me?
Yeah.
That was a yes, I can, but I'm not ready to tell you how.
You could do it with the zinc and mercury.
Almost, not quite. Zinc and mercury will take this. Oh, where did that come from? Zinc and mercury will take this guy. And if I do, this is the clemencin, zinc and mercury and HCl. And it will reduce it down and get rid of the carbonyl completely, but won't give me the methyl. So I got to get that methyl in there somehow. This just goes back to our standard synthesis thing. So what about, tell me the sequence, follow the sequence. You can tell me the result of each one of these reactions. Let's react this with a Grignard. Let's do CH3 MgBr as one, and then two dilute acid. What do I get? I get the tertiary alcohol where I've taken and I've added in that group onto that. And so that's where the CH3 minus part of the Grignard attacks the carbon. This bond breaks and opens up, and then I protonate it and I get the alcohol. So I could draw this in this way, which would make it look a little more familiar. Okay, and then what if I take and react this with tosyl chloride in pyridine?
You convert the OH to a good leaving group.
Yeah, I convert it into the tosylate, which is a good leaving group. And then what if I take and I treat this with LDA, lithium diisopropyl amide, in maybe I'm doing that in THF at minus 78 degrees C. This is
elimination product.
Yeah, E2 reaction. And so what I get is I get that. And then what if I treat this with H2 and platinum?
Hydrogenation.
Yeah. And I'm there. Okay, let's go back to this. We just learned how to make this, right? So we made that by taking and adding in the methyl, adding in the electron withdrawing group, adding in the chlorine. So I'm at this. What if I take that through this process? In taking that through that process, I can go and react it with the Grignard. I can then take that and react it with the tosyl chloride. I can eliminate it. And then I can finally hydrogenate it. And the hydrogenation will not affect the aromatic ring, because remember, hydrogenation doesn't affect aromatic rings unless we really up that pressure and up that temperature. So I can do this without fear of reducing my aromatic ring. And then I've effectively gotten to the place where I wanted to be. It took me a lot to do, but what I want to say is don't forget those old skill sets. You've got skills. All of you've got some mad skills. You just got to bring them once in a while. Don't forget that you've got those. Okay. And of course, if we wanted to convert this into just the alkyl group, getting rid of the carbonyl then we could have gone through the other reaction. I'll give you one more reaction. This is not a reaction that we do until the next chapter, until chapter 19. This is a sweet little little reaction though, just to show you that you can take a carbonyl and do a reaction that is called a vitig. And what the vitig does is it takes CH2 bound to a phenyl group that has three phenyl rings on it. And this reaction goes through a four-membered ring system that swaps out the CH2 for the oxygen. And it's called a vitig reaction. The W is pronounced as a V because it's a German word. So it's not wittig, it's vitig. And the vitig reaction replaces the carbonyl with whatever is connected to the phosphorus with a double bond. It keeps the double bond, but it just swaps it out. And then you can reduce it and we can get rid of all of those other steps, which is kind of a neat little trick, being able to do the vitig. And what the vitig does is the vitig, when you have a carbonyl and you treat it with the carbon and the phosphorus in this way, the carbon acts as an anion and the phosphorus as a cation. And what happens is the anion attacks here, breaking this bond, and the bond swings to the phosphorus. And it makes a four-membered ring system. And then that four-membered ring system collapses. These bonds go that way, and that bond goes that way. And as it collapses, the CH2 group makes the double bond with where it was, and the phosphorus combines with the oxygen. Phosphorus is very oxophilic, makes a very strong oxygen bond, which drives this reaction. And so it literally trades the CH2 group for the oxygen. And the vitig reaction is very, very general, which means that I can take any R group, and as long as it has a hydrogen on that R group, and bind it to a phosphorus, treat it with a strong base, and it makes the vitig reagent. That vitig reagent, when reacted with any carbonyl, I should say this is now R prime, and I react it with R prime, the vitig reagent, combines to give me the double bond to that R prime group and swaps it out. And I can use very large groups and very diverse groups. And it works sort of similarly to a Grignard in that it's organometallic and produces that negative charge, but it gives me a carbon-carbon double bond as opposed to a carbon single bond, and it gets rid of the oxygen altogether. It's like the inverse of ozonolysis, right? Ozonolysis splits the carbon-carbon double bond and gives you two carbonyls. This takes the carbonyl and converts it back into a carbon-carbon double bond. It's the absolute like reverse of ozonolysis, which is super cool. Okay, I didn't really come to show you that reaction, but this was so long that I felt like I wanted to just tell you that there are sometimes easier ways to do the same thing. But while I'm going to give you new reactions now and then, don't lose sight of the older skill sets of being able to go the long way around. And that sometimes we need to pull out that trick of having an electron withdrawing group in order to help to get something into a position that we normally wouldn't get it into. Okay. It's 4:42. We've been talking a long time. I'm tired. I'm sure you guys are tired. This was fun. It was a good number of things that we went through today. Some good practice, practice beyond what we did in the lecture, right?
I don't know what this 4:42 stuff is. It's only 1:42 where I'm at.
Oh, yeah. Well, that just means you have more pool time or ocean time, as the case may be. You're not looking tan enough. You've been studying way too much.
I haven't gone to the beach in a while.
Yeah, see? See? This is a problem.
But I got the man bun figured out, so.
Okay, all right. We'll give you points for that.
Compromise.
All right, I'm going to stop the screen share. Everybody good? Are there any questions? How are we feeling? Don't worry too much about that Wittig reaction. That's not something I'm going to test you on. It's something that's going to come up in the carbonyl chemistry and we'll study it formally. The rest of the class didn't see that. I just wanted to give you and show you sometimes there are alternatives to make things shorter. All the rest of the stuff was completely valid and on the table and a lot of good skill sets that went into that. Okay. So I think you guys did a lot of good practice today. Keep working on that exam. I will get your two quizzes graded and get them back to you tomorrow at some point so that you have them for the weekend and so that you can use them while you're finishing up the exams. So you have some things to look at as well. Okay.
Are you still doing those with the practice problems for lab or what was it?
Oh, don't worry about that until after the exam. Okay. I'm not going to put those up until after the exam. I want you guys to concentrate on the exam. Okay.
Where do you find that rubric for the checklist? You know what I'm talking about?
I do know exactly what you're talking about. Back to screen share, back to here, share. Here, go to somewhere, chemed.study. I think I linked it in the Canvas shell too, but the easiest way to get it is right here on the homepage on chemed.study, spectroscopy. There's a PDF and there's an
HTML. Oh, where it says rubrics.
Where yeah. It says rubrics, where those things are hiding. Yes. It's all good. No worries. There's a lot to keep track of. And I've got, you know, we've got the Canvas site and we've got this site. So there's two different places. And sometimes things get confused where things are located. You know, I'm trying to make the Canvas site more navigable. But in reality, this website, the chemed.study site, is one that I've just used for almost 20 years. And everything is just kind of right there, at least I feel like it is. So if you can't find something, always take a trip over here and just take a look and see. And it's probably not hiding too far away. Okay. But yeah, use that. Definitely use that as a checklist when you're doing the spectroscopy problem to make sure that you hit all the elements, because I'm going to use the rubric to grade it. And so that's your best checklist to make sure you don't forget anything. Okay. All right. If that's it, I'm going to get some notes uploaded and get things online so everybody can go and view that's asynchronous. And you guys know how to get a hold of me, so you can always email me. And I'm pretty good at getting back on the Discord. So I'm around. I'm not too far away.
Thank you, Jason.
All right. Take care, you guys.